Well, hi, everybody, and welcome into this week's Clemson Athletics Podcast. Don Munson along with Lemanski Hall, our defensive ends coach here for our football team, who is actually entering his second year as defensive end coach, and we'll talk a little bit more about his experience so far here at Clemson. But Lemanski, as we do this, we actually come off of our first day in full pads, so a tough day. Heat, kind of knew that Coach Sweeney would kind of stress the guys, and he did exactly that.
Right.
But your group, was just sitting and just kind of watching your group, knowing we're going to get a chance to talk, I thought your group came through it really well.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, that's we got, you know, five guys that I'm trying to get ready to play, and I thought the guys came out with energy. I wanted to see physicality at the early stages of it, and I was pleased. You know, no injuries. We got the bumps and the bruises, but for the most part, my guys came out pretty healthy.
We're going to obviously talk about your personnel, and we're going to do all of that. But I just want to give people maybe a sense of the background about who you are and where you have come from. Yep. Obviously, you played at Alabama. We're part of that 92 national championship team. Coach Sweeney and you were obviously teammates there at that time. So tell me a little bit about playing at Alabama. You were an all-SEC performer, an honorable mention All-American, leading tackler, as a matter of fact, for that 92 national championship team. What was that experience like maybe as a player as opposed to what you went through last year and also in 16?
Well, for me, you know, I think about my career at Alabama. It really started, I got recruited at Alabama as a safety. Bill Kerr was my coach.
Yep.
Coach Kerr gets fired, and we bring in Coach Stallings. And so these guys don't know anything about me, right? And so I was playing DB. Bill Oliver was the defense coordinator and my position coach. And I struggled there, to be honest with you, the first year, I struggled as a redshirt freshman. And eventually, you know, I was always a hitter. You know, I was always an aggressive player, loved the game. But I remember one day Coach Oliver comes in and said, hey, we're going to move you to linebacker, outside linebacker. And I thought it was the best thing for me because I was really getting tired of coaching. I was not coaching, but getting tired of Coach Oliver. We didn't mix, you know, and I was like, I needed a fresh start. And Ellis Johnson was the linebacker coach at the time, a man who I greatly admire and got a huge amount of respect for. He took me in and really taught me the game of football and just how he coached me and how he allowed me to just be me. And I thought from that standpoint, man, it was great. And so I've always thought that I could play at that level. All I needed was the coach to believe in me. And then Coach Johnson was like, hey, man, I'm going to put you in some games. And I played, right? And I started getting more playing time. I started getting more confidence in myself. And then eventually I go into my junior year, my redshirt junior year in 92, coming in the spring, that was my opportunity to start. And I'm one of those guys, man, once you give me a chance, I don't care what it is, I'm going to take advantage of it. And they gave me a chance to start. And I started that year, led the team in tackles. Just really, those are things that I thought about early on in my career, but just to see it happen the way it did. Became an all-SEC performer. And then you look up, I go into my senior year. I'm like, wow, here we go. I still got a chance to really do some things that I didn't think were ever going to happen. So I was a two-time SEC player. I was an all-decade player. And, you know, I look back on my career, man. I'm like, wow. I got selected into the seventh round of the 94 draft. All I ever wanted was an opportunity, and I got that chance to get into the NFL. So my career, I was the captain of the team in 93 because I felt like my teammates, they knew the kind of guy I was. I'm a loyal guy. They can count on me. I always put team first, and so they knew they could count on me. And so that's my career at Alabama.
That 92 national championship team.
Yeah.
You're one of the leaders, obviously, in the locker room, on the field, and all of that. Did you have a sense, though, even as a player, that hey, we got a shot at this. We have a shot of making a run and going and winning a national title.
Right. Well, I say yes because I knew the kind of players we had. In 91, we were 11-1.
Right.
Yeah. Right? And so we knew we had some good players. And then to come back and kind of put that thing together, it wasn't a surprise to us, the kind of team that we had. But if you look at the total body of work that our guys put in, you don't realize the kind of team you have until, you know, 15, 20 years out. And you're like, man, look at the team. You know, we had two first rounders, actually three off that team. And then we had backups that went to the NFL. So the coaches did a great job, man, recruiting the type of talent that we have. And just to see that I was just a small part of that, man. You know, we had great players, and, you know, we all did our job and took pride in it. But I was just a small piece of that, and I was just lucky. I was blessed to be a part of a great team that bought into what we were trying to do. And we got to Miami. You know, I think about the first SEC championship game against Florida, man. And golly, we were destined to get to that national championship game. Antonio Langham picks that ball off in the corner, Shane Matthews, and we score. It's 28-21. And here we go, going to the national championship game.
On a cold, bitter day in Birmingham,
freezing.
Alabama.
It was freezing in Birmingham.
No doubt about it.
Yes, sir.
All right, but that is also, you know, and Coach Sweeney talks about this all the time, this is part of the Clemson family thing, relationships. Relationships are everything. And so that's where your relationship starts to build with Coach Sweeney.
Yeah.
Talk, you know, what did you all hang around a little bit? Did you become fast friends? How did you develop that relationship?
So I met Dabo in 1989. And it's funny because we had, you know, he's always a good coach, not a good coach, but a good person, good teammate. And so that year, I remember, man, how just watching him work, and then how he was such a good teammate. He was just nice, you know. Hey, Ski, you know, let's hang out. And it's funny because I had a buddy of mine from my hometown that was playing basketball at UAB. And so at that time, Dabo was dating Kath, and Kath's parents. I don't know if her dad was teaching at UAB. I'm not sure, but I knew he loved basketball. So Sweeney and I would drive up from Tuscaloosa to Birmingham and go to UAB basketball games. And he invited me because he knew I had a friend that played at UAB. So we became friends right there, you know, driving up, hanging out. Sweeney was one of those guys that would always welcome teammates. He was always nice to everybody. And so we hung out, you know. I remember one year we were on this... We had a softball team. All right, we played softball together. You know, I remember one year, Coach Stalling kicks me out of the dorm, and Dabo said, "Hey, you can stay with my brother Tripp." You know, his mom was always cooking for us. So my relationship with Coach Sweeney, man, goes back. You know, I really truly see him as a brother. I really appreciate all he's ever done for me. When I went to the NFL, we stayed in contact. It was never a time that I could remember that we didn't talk or that we never hung out. We were always doing something together. When I was in the league, I would fly into Birmingham, Alabama. When I was in Houston, I would call him up. And he'd say, "Hey, man, let's go play some golf." And so we would play golf and do things like that. So I really appreciate him.
Well, and then I'm just going to take people through this because I want to get also now to the story of Coach hiring you here. So 9 years in the NFL,
yep.
Houston drafts you in the seventh round. So you're with the Oilers, and of course they had the move then over to Nashville, and they become obviously the Titans in Tennessee. So you had to go through that transition. I think you spent a year with Chicago,
yep.
And then what ended up with Minnesota. Just played 3 years with Minnesota. So that experience, and maybe just the coaches that you're around at that point in time. I mean, tell us some of the guys that were coaching you up, because I know these are going to be names that all of us know.
So I get drafted by the Oilers. At the time, it was Jack Pardee was the head coach. Jeff Fisher was the D coordinator. Greg Williams was my linebacker coach. Okay. Sherman Smith, who spoke to our team today, he was a running backs coach. All right. And then we transitioned from Houston to Tennessee, was the Tennessee Oilers. And in 98, I was on the team in the at training camp. I got traded in 98 to Chicago Bears. Dave Wannstedt was my head coach. All right. And so after the 98 season, Coach Wannstedt gets fired. And you're gonna hear a trend here in a second. Coach Wannstedt gets fired. They bring in Dick Geron. Dick Geron comes in, and so he wanted to change our team, make them younger, get them younger. And so I got released that year. I got picked up by the Dallas Cowboys in '99. Chan Gailey was the head coach. Dave Campo was my D coordinator, and Mike Zimmerman was the secondary coach. Okay, the Mad Hatter. He's a LSU former LSU coach.
Oh, Les Miles.
Les Miles. Okay. Miles was the tight ends coach with the Cowboys at the time. Okay, so after '99 season, I didn't like it in Dallas. I appreciate them getting me there, but I knew that wasn't the right spot for me. I was a free agent, and Minnesota Vikings called me, and that was Coach Green. Dennis Green was the head coach at the time. Mike Tice was the O-line coach. Okay, so I had some fun times in Minnesota, and so I just think about that, man. You know, but here's the funny part: every team I've ever been on, starting from my career at Alabama all the way up to the pros, the head coach has been fired. All right? I go to Alabama. Bill Curry was the coach. Bill Curry was the head coach. Coach Stallings comes in. Okay? I go to Houston. Jack Pardee is the coach. Jeff Fisher comes in. I go to Chicago. Dave Wannstedt is the coach. You get Dick Geron. Minnesota, Denny Green is the coach. And you get Mike Tice.
Mike Tice. Yep.
So that's my career in the NFL. So I've had good coaches. I learned a lot. You know, I appreciate the grind of the NFL. Totally different than the way I came. Like the way I came up, we had two-a-days all the time. You know, it was constantly grinding, hitting all the time. But I wouldn't change a thing about my experience in the NFL.
Well, I hope you enjoyed your time of employment here at Clemson, because we're not going to let that happen. The head coach better not get fired on your watch while you're here.
No, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's the hopeful. All right, so you went and you were coaching in high school. I think you were at a private school.
Innsworth.
Yeah,
school.
In Innsworth. Okay, so then you get the call, though. And I think that I'd seen you up here working camps. I think, yeah. Remember the first time I ever met you was actually in the West Zone when we had our offices over there. Yeah. Coach introduced me to you at that time. So you come up and you start working camp. But then, and I'm sure that Dabo's taking notice, because that's what he does. He takes notice of everybody. Tell me about the call that he made and said, hey, I want you to come up here and you become a defensive analyst for Clemson.
Right. So we used to always talk about working together. Coach Wynn used to keep a book, a binder of guys he would want to work for one day if you ever get a head coaching job. He told me, he said, Ski, I got you as one of my guys if I ever get a chance. So I got into high school ball. After I retired from the NFL, I just fell in love with just high school ball. I volunteered at a local high school in Nashville. Fell in love with just being around young men in football. And so I coached there. I was at CPA, Kane Patterson's high school. And then I coached at Innsworth for about 7 years. I had a total of 9 years of high school coaching. And then at some point you get tired, like, okay, it's time to do something else. And I was trying to figure out, how can I get from high school to college? And at the time, I think Alabama had started this player development position where you can come in the off-the-field role and kind of do some analyst things like that. So I remember just trying to figure that out, and I remember reaching out to Coach Sweeney, asking him, hey, because I had got my transcript ready for another place, not my transcript, but my
resume.
Sorry, I got my resume ready for another school at the time, and I just called Dabo and said, hey, can you be a reference for me? And he said, sure. And so this is about 2 weeks later. He calls me. I'm at a basketball game. He calls me, and I said, oh, I missed the call. So I called him back. And, man, I'm telling you, I called him back, and he started asking me questions. I say, hey, if this school call you and offer you a job, are you ready to leave? And I said, yeah. And then, long story short, he said, hey, what if I tell you I got a position here for you at Clemson? I said, man, shut up. Don, I'm telling you, man, I screamed. I was like, man, shut up. He said, yeah. He said the guy who was in that position, he was talking about West. West.
Yep.
Said West took a job at Arizona Cardinals. With the Cardinals, and he said, "Ski, it's your job if you want it." And so I just got married to my wife, and I just remember her. I remember going upstairs screaming, "Hey, you wouldn't believe what just happened." And he said, "Hey, why don't you bring your wife over? You know, come over, see the place." I think it was a recruiting weekend. We come over, and we saw the place, man, and the rest is history. You know, I had been coming over to Clemson already, working camps and coming to games and all that stuff. So I knew the people. I knew the coaches. I knew all those guys. And he said, "Just come over and see it." And I knew in my mind that this is what I wanted to do. I just needed my wife to come and see it. And, man, I'm excited to be here. And here's the other part. When they decide to go with the 10th coach, and the NCAA decided to go with
the 10th
coach.
I know this story, yeah.
So I'm sitting there in the staff meeting room, and I think Coach Brooks just retired. And Harvey was still the coach. And I remember him, Coach Sweeney, saying, "Mickey Khan's going to be my safety coach. And Ski, you're going to be my D tackle coach." And I didn't hear anything else after that. I did not, man. I'm like, what just happened? He said, "Ski, can you coach D-line?" I said, "Yeah, I coach D-line." And, man, it's just been awesome ever since.
Yeah. I remember that. And then you had to wait a year. Because remember the NCAA thought that we were going
to
do it. And then you had to be patient.
Yeah, I had to
wait a year.
Yeah.
And like they say also about recruiting, coach, just get them on campus.
Yeah.
And you can sell it. You sold your wife. So you did a good job.
Did
all right.
A really good job.
So you should be 3 years into this, but here you are 2 years. Year number one, you've got all the talent in the world. You've got three guys off of that defensive front, obviously, are taking the first 17 picks of the draft.
Yeah.
Then we have Austin going over to the Detroit Lions later on.
Yeah.
Albert shows up with the Texans, so not a bad grab, a bad group to work with, but particularly at DN now, with Klee and Austin and those cats that you had. What was that experience like? Did you really have to coach them up that much? Because that was such an older group, and those guys controlled everything on this football team.
Absolutely. I think you said it best. You get a group of guys like that with the leadership ability and the quality of men they are, and I didn't have to do much. Really, I learned a lot from them.
Mm.
And I went in that thing just really humbled by the opportunity. And I told them, I said, "Look, man, I'm going to have to lean on you guys." Now, you got to mind you, I've never played defensive end. I was an outside linebacker, inside backer. That's my background. But they allowed me to give them some advice on some things, and I took what they taught me. And it made me a better person. And I appreciate them. And all I needed to do is just kind of look. You know, obviously, you got to coach and you got to lead and you got to push and you got to do all those things. But they knew how to work already. You know, that was not an issue. For me, it was getting those young guys and reminding them, hey, when you have a guy like Austin, you got Klee, you got Chris Register, you got Richard Yergin in that room. This is the time to really learn. And I told the older guys, I said, take these young boys under your wing and show them what it looks like. And they did a great job and taught them and really taught me as well.
Well, the fact that you mentioned Register and Yergin, people have zero clue how much those two guys impacted this football team.
Yeah.
I mean, they got some play. Obviously, Richard now loses his career because of a neck injury, although he's off to Boston College and showing up there. But, you know, those two guys were just tremendous. All right, so here we go, though, this year.
Yeah.
Everything's a little different now. I mean, you know, you got great talent to work with. Xavier Thomas, Logan, you know, on one side.
Yeah.
You got Justin Foster, KJ Henry over there.
Justin Maskell's
going to be those. So those, I think, are primary five of what we're talking about. Then you got to grow some other kids up behind that. So this group, you know, and we're only here a week into practice, but what so far are you seeing from these guys?
Well, I see a group just learning to work together, right? And trying to learn how to compete amongst each other, right? And what I like about them is they bought into that, hey, man, there's no starter, right? We got to work every day. We got to compete. And they're competing every day. They're coming to work. They're checking in, right? Justin Foster, Logan Rudolph, they are now the leaders of that group. And I've challenged them to lead, and they've done a great job. And so my expectation is very high. You know, we're not going to take a step back to anybody. We're going to come in, we're going to outwork everybody and just be the best version of ourselves. I don't expect them to be a Cleveland Farrell. I don't expect them to be an Austin Bryant. I expect them to be the best version of themselves. Come in every day to work, grind. Those older guys, set the example of what it looks like. So they don't have to go out and try to reinvent anything. Just do what they saw.
Last question for you, and that it involves KJ Henry. And I don't want to try to single any one guy out, but the reason I want to ask this question, because KJ actually comes to you all on the staff last year and says, you know what? It's probably best that I redshirt.
Right.
For a young man to have that kind of maturity, I think speaks volumes about it.
I agree with that. You know, we were trying to decide what we're going to do with KJ. And KJ saw it. Man, it was a lot that he needed to get better at, a lot of areas. And it's hard for a freshman to come in and play college ball right away. And that decision was one that he made. And I'm glad he did. You know, I get another year back with him.
Yep.
And for him, it gave him the opportunity to get in the weight room, mature, get stronger, do all the things that he needed to do to be a college football player. And I appreciate him taking on that and doing that.
I lied to you. It wasn't my last question. This is, though.
Yeah.
Because of the new redshirt rule, though, you got four games. You know, you got four games now to play with. How much of an advantage is that for you all?
I think it's a huge advantage because you're trying to evaluate players, right? And that's what happened to KJ.
Yeah.
KJ played four games, and we're like, okay, all right, do we redshirt him or do we play him? And the decision that we, you know, he helped with that decision, but it was one that, you know, now moving forward, we have that opportunity to play guys for a game. It helps with the evaluation process. And so I'm going to utilize that as much as I can, all of us, to evaluate our guys and make decisions based on what we need to do for the team.
All right. Great having you here. Love that you're part of this staff, part of this family.
Yeah.
It is a special place to be, and no doubt.
Yeah, I agree, man. People say it's something in those hills. And I think about Clemson, man. Clemson, this family. And it's made of a great people. And my wife and I, we're excited to be here. We plan on being here a long time.
We plan on you being here a long time. All right, there you go. Lemanski Hall has been our guest here on the podcast today. Hey, don't forget, still tickets available for that first game against Georgia Tech. You can order yours online through the official website of Clemson Athletics, clemsontigers.com. You can call the Clemson Ticket Office. It's a toll-free call for you if you want to, 1-800-CLEMSON. Business hours Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 4:30, so you can get that done there as well. All right? So that's our podcast for the day. My thanks to Lemanski for being with us. Appreciate you spending some time here with us on the podcast. Until next time, go Tigers.